Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Say what you're thinking.
WhatsApp, Google it on Fupi.
063-688-0959.
Kaya Biz.
On the street, on the air.
For me, I go to Auto Trader to be specific. It's just that when you go directly to the car manufacturer's websites, they're always cumbersome and very hard. Make it not user-friendly for you to find a car. So I go to Auto Trader. I bought my one via Auto Trader.
Hi, Google. I think for me, I pride myself in being a tech-savvy shopper. So as much as previously I would have gone on Google search, you know, Google the specific car that I would have liked, perhaps seen the budget around that, now I just use AI. And wherever AI takes me to go, that's where I'll end up, whether it's an independent dealer, reseller, whatever the case might be. I'll input my particulars, my reality, and I get a response back that actually works for me.
Well, those are just a few of the voice notes that we've gotten from Dynamic Island, as well as Ntokozo Makubo, giving us some insight as to where they go to purchase their vehicles. That's on the back of an interview we had just a few moments ago with the president, the vice chairperson, rather, of NADA, the National Automobile Dealers Association. Essentially, where we're told that we as South Africans, when it comes to buying our cars, no longer is it about going to an independent dealership, touching and feeling the car, sitting in the leather seats, speaking to the salesperson, having a cup of coffee. That whole experience seems as though many of us choose to go online, especially with AI. But share your thoughts. If you're driving in your car right now, tell us where you bought it. If you're in the market to buy a car, where are you looking? Are you looking at the likes of We Buy Cars, Auto Trader, using AI and technology? Are you building your car online and just walking into the dealership for delivery from the original equipment manufacturer? Or are you going to an independent dealership in order to get a wider array and variety of vehicles? Share your voice notes with us on 063-688-0959.
Pivot Point
on Kaya Biz. Kaya Biz.
As you would know by now, on Thursdays, we have Pivot Point here on Kaya Biz. This is where we have the phenomenal opportunity to speak to leaders. And when I say leaders, I say it with a strong sense of confidence in my chest, primarily because these are individuals who shape the landscape of business in South Africa. Institutions that essentially have an influence on our economic outcomes, the economic outcomes of the country, and do so by navigating the wide variety of macroeconomic factors, political shifts and changes, and how it is that we compete within the global landscape. Tonight, I'm incredibly excited to introduce our guest for Pivot Point, someone who has a long-standing history within banking and financial services, having been introduced to Nedbank back in 2005, and since worked his way up, taking care of various markets in corporate banking, of course also looking at the rest of the continent, and fundamentally playing a critical role within the strategic direction of the bank. Coupled with that, he's got a wealth of knowledge and insight in the public sector, having worked at the South African Revenue Service and at the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. I've often spoken to him on financial results, both internally at the bank and here on this platform. And I can tell you he has the world of my, I give him the world of my respect, essentially, given our interactions. Ubaba Mfundo Nkuhlu, the COO of Nedbank. Such a pleasure to have you, sir.
It's a real pleasure to be here this evening. Thanks, Kuku.
I'm really excited to speak to you because every time I've interacted with you, it's been so informative, so insightful. But most importantly, there's a gentle care with which you share information and impart knowledge, which I think for many leaders, when it comes to interacting, whether with the media or anyone much younger with them, there's never a tone of perhaps being condescending there's a view of teaching, if I can put it that way. So thank you for your interactions with me in the past.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much. And it's been mutual. And so I also learned from the inquiry and the engagement.
Thank you so much. We often talk about the company results and the African operations versus what we see in wealth and various other activities in the bank. But fill us in on what your role as COO practically involves, because for many of us, we look at it and it's quite a big chunk of the business to handle. But what does that look like?
Yes, it is. It sure is a big portfolio. No 2 days are the same.
Yeah.
I look after the operations of the bank and what we call also shared services. These are all these services that line up behind our frontline businesses. Frontline being the segments that interface with the market. And so you have individuals that are looked after in the retail business.
Mm-hmm.
You have mid-sized companies that are looked after by commercial banking. Then the top end would be corporate and investment banking.
Yes.
We have the Africa businesses, which is a geographic play because those are now subsidiary operations outside of the country. So that is where the interface with clients takes mm-hmm. place. Behind that, we line up the risk services to manage our banking risk across the board. We also have compliance functions to support that.
Yep.
Then specifically under my ambit of responsibility, we have HR, we have technology, HR being human resources.
Yes.
Technology falls under my ambit, so does marketing. In strategy. And so we've got to think about where we are as a bank, how we compete into the future, who are we competing against, and the changing landscape of those competitors, which then results in the changing landscape of banking itself.
Yes.
So against that backdrop, I have to ask very searching questions about appropriateness of our business models. In what ways do we tweak them? We've got to agree to those propositions as the leadership team, solicit the support of the board, and then on the back of that, execute and monitor the effectiveness of that execution. So
you've put it so succinctly and beautifully. And this is where I want to get to it, because if I'm not mistaken, you've been COO since 2015.
Yes, indeed.
Been at Nedbank since 2005.
Four.
Thank you for that correction. So that's quite a long time to actually witness not only the operational shifts within the different verticals of the business, but also playing a very critical role at a strategic level. And in the last decade, when I just think about the shifts we've seen in the macroeconomic environment, but also the banking landscape, boy oh boy, have there been plenty.
Yes.
And I'm keen for you just to share some of your reflections and some learnings on how the banking environment in South Africa has evolved to such a level where we really are regarded to be the best of the best from a global point of view.
It's a good question. South African financial services sector broadly, and banking specifically, has always been very, very strong historically. In world benchmarks, we would come up in the top tier of countries. It's something to be proud of as a country, because for us to forge ahead, they've got to be areas of distinctiveness
mm-hmm.
where we compete beyond and above our real weight. And so financial services is one of those. The principal challenge of financial services, as we see it, is that it's got to be inclusive. And so the objectives of financial inclusion, very, very important
mm-hmm.
to help bring a majority of our people into the mainstream of the economy. If you really think about it, there are many definitions of what a bank is that go around. And the one perhaps that's convenient for me and for purposes of this discussion, is that we mobilize the nation's savings.
100%.
In order to help create new assets. Okay?
Succinctly put,
Now, can we do so such that we can bring people who are historically excluded
mm-hmm.
into that process? So we have a reason to exist beyond just ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're really relevant when we make a difference in the quality of life of our people. That is what our day jobs is all about. Yes, we've got to do that in a competitive environment. We compete aggressively against other institutions, but also there are ties that bind.
Mm-hmm.
We exist together as an industry, so we have joint and collective responsibility to look after the system, financial system of the country and the sector itself. We have very strong regulators, and we're well regulated, which is a plus. We've seen the risk of weak regulation. We've gone through global financial crisis.
Yes.
That was a big telling point about unintended consequences of programs and policies put in place in one jurisdiction and quickly expanding across the world. So we learned there. So there have been very many important changes over time. In the here and now, I think our reading of the future of financial services is that they dovetail very strongly with transformation that are happening in the digital arena.
Yes.
And so banking institutions like us, which have been in existence for over 150 years, now have to morph and respond to changes that in the marketplace that are brought in by new players, particularly things that we've had to learn from technology companies,
yes,
from fintechs.
Yes.
So we're modernizing the banking offering in that sense. So pockets of new value creation for us will be in how quickly we undertake that digital transformation, complete it, and make sure that the interface with the clients is as seamless as possible, that we improve the experience that they have in their engagement with us.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that the clients are looking for? They're really looking for personalized services.
Yes.
At the point of convenience, and that they want us to provide secure channels and platforms over which they transact.
100%.
That's what this is about.
I'm glad that you touch on that. And of course, you know, the variations that have taken place in the industry to make sure that banking is quite, as you said, you know, mobilizing savings to ensure that we can expand on the asset base. Mm. Let's zone into technology for a bit, because I'm aware that that's been a key focus as well of your portfolio.
Yep.
And one of the last few headlines that I did see was one where Nedbank has been completing more than 11 billion rand investment within artificial intelligence and technology.
Yep.
Talk to us about that, because the beauty about technology is that it does allow us to provide quicker, sharper. We leverage technology in order to bring solutions to people.
Yeah.
But technology also develops so quickly, and
yes,
sometimes regulation lags,
yes,
innovation might be faster, partnering with the right operators is also an area of expertise that you need to delve into, and the jurisdictions and markets that you operate in all have different levels of maturity.
Yes, indeed.
How have you navigated that?
As well as new risks that,
yes,
come into the process as, uh-huh, as we implement new solutions. You're correct on that one. First of all, banking is a business of scale. You need scale to succeed,
yes,
in it over time. That scale is derived in large measure through acquisition of clients. And so we all seek to have more and more clients of appropriate risk profile, but also to sell more products and solutions into that client base.
Mm-hmm.
And so we track and measure things like that.
The full 360 needs analysis.
It needs analysis.
Risk,
and
savings,
also, yes,
investment.
Product penetration levels.
Yes.
And so that is what it is all about. Largely, our responsibility is to understand the needs of the client and then tailor, provide solutions that respond to those needs. That is when you get ahead of the competition, understanding that you're only as good as yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to keep ahead of the curve. The others are also champing at the bit and looking at opportunities to come in. So in our own cases, Nedbank, we sought to leverage technology investment to provide us that scale.
Yes.
Particularly in the manner in which we service the consumer market. You may well recall that at the turn of the last century, Nedbank was probably ahead, you know, of the market in conceiving a confluence of banking and technology.
Yes.
Yeah. It probably would be a shame if when that convergence happened, we're not in the action. And
makes
so
sense.
We kind of said, we have a heritage here. Let's leverage that heritage, pushing ourselves to run and be fast mover in the space. So to your point, yes, we invested over the last nearly a decade now, some 11 billion rand into a refresh of our technology stack.
Mm-hmm.
Banks run big mainframes as a technology backbone,
yes,
for the services that we provide.
And if I make, I think it's important that we emphasize that as well. I'm aware that there's some shifts happening within the payments arena and shifts in regulation as
big
well for
shifts,
both banked,
yeah,
and non-banking platforms. And for us as South Africans, we take our phones, we take our cards, you tap a machine, boom, Bob's
boom,
your uncle.
Yes.
I use PayShap, I use my colleague's number, boom, they have money in their account. And I think we take for granted the intricacies of the ecosystem that takes place in the background to make sure that
behind
this money can move. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And what we needed to do was to recognize that that backbone, or mainframe backbone, was designed for an old technology world.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed now to create a more modular technology stack, more agile, if we want to refresh, modernize, or make a new investment, there's a new innovation in the market, you didn't have to change the entire infrastructure.
Yes.
Okay, the infrastructure is ready-made, modular, and adaptive to new changes. Then you change relevant pieces.
Yes.
That means you'd now run at lower operating costs. That was the whole point. And so we've done that also to enable, to your point, that our clients can also transact with us through the technology devices.
Mm.
The world of mobile has changed
over, hey?
Dramatically in front of our eyes, from not being there at all.
Yeah.
Okay. If you think of the major mobile companies, they started in 93 in this country.
Yes.
1993. Now everybody is having a smartphone. Others operate two, three at a time.
Exactly. And without your phone, you struggle.
You struggle.
You forget your car keys, but your phone?
Life is not the same.
True.
And actually, it's quite interesting and intriguing, because if I look back at also at conversations that have taken place in financial sector transformation conversation, you can tell that the design was much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
People would say, in order to provide access to finance, provide a branch within a radius of 100 kilometers, okay? Then you sit back and say, oh, that's interesting. Mm. That conception is that banking is a physical premises.
And that's been challenged.
That's been challenged. And I'm sitting there saying, I'm not going to give you a branch within a radius of 100 kilometers. I'm going to give you access to a device.
Yes.
So your banking will be in your hand, in your home, any day, every day, at a point of convenience. You transact, I'll provide you systems uptime.
Sure.
So that the transaction can go through seamlessly.
Babunkuku, this gets me excited, because when I think about the variation or the evolution of banking, you've lived through a few cycles.
Yes.
I can imagine in the 70s when we had the first ATM, a checkbook,
yep.
Of course evolving into branches, and now we're on banking apps. So when you, as a banker, yeah. envisage what the future of banking looks like for us, perhaps in the next 2 decades,
mm-hmm.
what does it look like?
So suddenly...
Let's start with the decade, maybe, because your strategy.
Decade, yeah,
so,
yeah. It will. We will continue to have physical premises. Mm-hmm. They will still be there, because you also do not want to change too far ahead of your market,
mm-hmm.
and therefore leave clients behind.
And South Africa is a
South Africa is a duality yeah. in its economic structure. There's still a considerable gap between urban and rural settings.
Mm.
But to your question, if you think about it, the underlying notion has to be that many of the solutions that we face as a nation and as a country will be found in new ways of thinking than that which generated the problem in the first place.
Got you.
Okay. So if we want to grow the rural sector, we've got to grow it in a manner that integrates with the urban.
Yes.
And not think of it as distinctly different.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm able to provide you access through a mobile device, then I've got to make sure that there's infrastructure across the country that yes. will allow person in the rural sector to participate in that system pretty much on the same terms.
Yes.
They may not necessarily be running a fiber, but they'll have access to a satellite.
Got you.
We've got to think of it that way. Then we've got to be talking with the telecoms industry about the cost of data, because if we want adoption rates to increase, then the cost has to come down and volume to grow.
That's why banking apps like NetBank are zero-rated when it comes to data.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we have PayShare priced at 1 rand per transaction, so
yes.
that those transactions can happen seamlessly.
Got you.
Among other things, it's also intended to shift the weight of transactions from cash into digital channels.
Mm-hmm.
That allows a lower cost of delivery of these services to clients, and then that can bring very many of the people into mainstream at a lower and more affordable cost. Of course, we've got to think of the associated risk now.
Yes.
You've got to take your clients with you. In some respects, there's hand-holding. You raise levels of confidence for people that they can transact on these channels without losing their money.
100%.
That requires us then to reconfigure the branches into service centers. So you may still walk into a branch, but the process we'll be taking you through is the same process that you have on your phone. All that we know, we're providing a human intervention, hand-holding to make you understand.
Trust generation.
Trust in the processes. And once you're comfortable with that, you can do this on your own, on the device.
100%.
That is where the future of banking is headed. There are other things we've got to think about which were probably not front of mind when we were conceiving of these solutions. You look at the dynamics of crime in our own country. People now say, okay, syndicates come and ask for my PIN number, and they're asking me to transfer from my phone directly into another account. Then you sit back and say, okay, this technology that is enabling ease of transacting could be counterproductive if we've not thought through
the risks. Yes.
So how do we circumvent that? So there's a lot of thinking and design work that is going into that space.
Enhancing security.
Enhancing security.
Fantastic.
Because adoption, high adoption rates are directly correlated to level of security and comfort that people experience.
100%. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. It's 27 minutes after 7 o'clock. If you're wondering how we have gone through this wonderful journey, truly getting into the mind of a strategist, really, giving us a full 360 view of banking in South Africa, the past, the present, and most importantly, the future, we are speaking to the Chief Operations Officer at Nedbank, Ubab Mfundo Nkuhlu, joining us today to share some reflections and critical thought leadership with us here tonight. I am so intrigued by how you've taken us on this journey of understanding the ecosystem and the plethora of threats, but yet opportunities as well that exist in the market. And if anything, for anyone who's listening, I think this takes us into your mind as a leader and as a strategist, because you don't look at things in isolation and are fully considerate of the environment. I'm keen just for us to reflect on your journey through leadership, some pivotal lessons that you've learned, because as you've mentioned, a number of financial crises, macroeconomic factors, COVID, introduction of technology and ongoing innovation that's still taking place. I can imagine that you sit up and have reflected on, you know, what it truly takes to be a key strategist in a market like South Africa, where you're challenged by so many variants in the industry. So when you think strategy and being a strategist, what key lessons or characteristics stand out for you?
Well, even before we talk strategy, just leadership in the broadest sense of the word.
Yes.
I think there are two things. First of all, make sure that you invest in yourself. You build your capabilities. And so these are core skills and disciplines that are needed in the working world. But ultimately, success is a combination of that plus a luck, good breaks.
Yeah.
Those come from working with people who are experienced than you are. You learn from them. You watch carefully what they do. And so for me, that's been the journey I've been on. I think back of the days when the country was going through transition and we're busy writing the RTP at the time. In the communal blueprint for the country.
Yes.
We had no sense of what to expect in the new state. We were all coming from outside of that. But that gave me an opportunity to learn from incredible individuals of stature, of accomplishment, of repute, and you watch how they do things. And then we did that. And on the back of that exercise, they turned around and say, yeah, the country's changed in the state, so pack your bags, go to Pretoria. There's a government to run. And you walk into it and say, well, where do we begin?
Right.
Okay, where do we begin? And again, step back, catch your breath and say, okay, I'm going to be methodical. Got to break down this problem into sizable chunks that I can deal with. in the context of that exercise, I and a couple of others were thrown in the deep end. South Africa needed to reestablish relationships with the rest of the world.
Yes.
Up to that point, we were a pariah state. Okay?
Yes.
Everybody else had forced relationships, trade relationships. And so we entered a series of negotiations, concluded the World Trade Organization, and then started negotiations with the European Union.
This is during your time at the DTI?
At the DTI, yeah. And then, closer to home, we entered into the trade protocol with the SADC countries, renegotiated the customs union agreement in San Cruz. So you look at that. And then you watch the people across you, across the table in the negotiation process. Collectively, every team would have over 100 years of negotiating experience. Ooh. Some of them were sitting with big libraries, and we quickly understood that part of the key to success is to reduce whatever positions and contentious negotiating points we had into a written proposition. Whoever goes into the negotiating arena with the text ready, that's half the battle won.
So preparedness as a leader.
Preparedness
leads
as a leader.
To success.
To success. Okay. Adaptability as a leader is very, very critical. And so we then have learned those lessons. You come back home, you report to key constituencies, make sure that nobody's left behind. Then you realize that leadership also requires energy of those at the coalface, as well as the energy of those watching the scene from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
The different energies, but it's the collective contribution and input of all those forces.
Different perspectives too?
That yields sustainable outcome.
Got you.
Okay. So you did that, and then at a point in time when that exercise was done, I was asked to work on the NEPAD program to give a refresh to that program. At that point, the policies were really developed prior 94 as we were going into the state.
Mm-hmm.
This was now a policy to refresh and look at how South Africa wanted to relate with the rest of the continent and how that could lead to the growth and development of Africa.
Mm.
As an African, it was a privilege to be asked to do this work.
I can imagine.
Yes, indeed. Exposed us also, in some respects, to work that had been done by others before.
Mm-hmm.
But we brought in, I suppose, a uniquely South African perspective into that, would like to believe. And things progressed from there. And then when that exercise was done, that's when I moved over to join SARS.
My goodness, such a rich history. And I'm glad that you reflected on, you know, your early days just in terms of leadership and how it continues to play a role today. And I think that's critical because I can imagine, Baba Mfundo, you interact with a lot of young leaders. Everybody wants to be an innovator. We all want to craft and continue to partner. And if there's anything that we've learned pre, post the pandemic, and even moving into the future, collaborative efforts are necessary in order to shift the needle forward. When you take a look, I guess, even at this younger crop of leaders that are coming up in all spheres and spaces.
Yes.
What is it that we should be mindful of? Or if there's one key lesson you could leave with us and share with us, what would that be?
Well, I suppose we all have different approaches. It's what works for you as an individual. What has worked for me is to think of life as a spiral. Okay.
Hopefully moving up, I assume, or down.
Well, there are many things, many ways of thinking and looking at life. Some think of it in terms of linearity. I'm going to school, I'll go to university, I'll qualify, I'll get the next job, I'll go up the ladder of hierarchy in corporate life or business or wherever. That's one worldview. Others think of life in secular terms. The sun will shine today, it will set in the evening, it will shine again tomorrow morning. And so there's secularity there. And again, these are forces of nature, so it's not irrelevant. For me, I like to combine the two. Mm-hmm. So I want to go forward, and so I don't want to come to the same space again, okay. But go forward in a circular way. That's why a spiral makes sense. That means I don't just go forward by myself. I also think of how I pull others.
Gotcha.
As a leader, I have a responsibility to learn and take a hand from those who've come before me,
mm-hmm.
but I have a responsibility to plow back and pull others as I go up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my responsibility to the next generation of leaders coming through, both within the bank and in broader society as well.
100%. This has been such a refreshing conversation with you, Babunkuhle. We just touched the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even gone into much deeper insight and analysis that you've shared. But if there's anything that I'm appreciative of is how you've taken us on a journey of fully understanding and grasping the evolution of banking in South Africa, how leadership plays a critical role in that regard, and understanding that leadership in itself is an evolution. And you never quite stop learning, but you do need to be bold enough to take the decisions, take the risks, but of course partner with the right partners in order to see collaborative outcomes of success. This has been a refreshing conversation. Thank you so much for your time this evening, sir.
Google, it's been a pleasure. Thanks indeed. Looking forward to our next engagement on the very many areas of interest.
Definitely. Yeah. That is Ubabunku Mfundo Nkuhlu, the COO of Nedbank, joining us tonight to share some of his pivotal lessons, pivotal experiences on Pivot Point with us tonight.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.